Session number 17624, John Allen, Reel 1.
Reel 1. Where were you born, Mr. Allen?
No, I just talk. I was born on in Gateshead, Redruff Road, which is now demolished, 1922.
What is your date of birth?
1st of July. Now, I was a twin, and I had a twin sister. Now, she died 3 years ago. So that was, we were the second last of the family. We had a younger brother who was born 2 years later. So I come of a family of six children. My mum was a South Durham girl, Brandon Colliery. And my dad was the first of his family to leave Holy Island, Lindisfarne. In all the centuries they lived there, we can trace back at least 4 centuries on Lindisfarne. And we lost a lot of our male family during the very violent storms in the 1870s, and in fact it decimated the family. And my father, because of that, wouldn't be a fisherman as my grandfather was. And he came down at 19 to Tyneside to get work. There was no work at Holy Island because the population then was quite extensive compared to what it is now. And it was a nice place to have a father come from, I'll tell you, because we had a base then to go back as a family, and we had property there, cottages. And we always had a summer holiday when most children didn't have one, you know, because my father was a railway worker. And he used to get free transport, of course.
Your father was a railway man. What work did he do on the railways?
Well, he drove horses, transport. He delivered goods from the railway to the customers all over the town in Newcastle area. And we lived in Gateshead, of course, which is at the other side of the river.
Was it a railway house you lived in?
No, it was a private landlord's back-to-back housing, you know, in the Gateshead area, off Redruff Road. Redruff Road, where I was born, and then we moved when I was about 3, because we had the younger brother who was an infant, and he was alive then, so it was... It would be roughly 25 when we moved from Redruff Road to Ryton Street.
And did your mother work?
Pardon?
Did your mother work?
No. In those days, there was very few women worked, you know. In fact, between you and I think that was the beginning of the end of family life, when women had to work, and that was 2 world wars had seen to that. I think a mother should be with children, because you see the problem now with the youngsters. This is my opinion. Anyhow, what was the vein we were talking of?
I was going to ask you, what wage did your father earn?
Oh, yes. Now, my father didn't earn a big wage in those days. £2.05. And he kept a family of 6. But my mother was so ill when we were born, the twins. She wasn't a very well woman most of her life. That the elder boy, Jim, who lives in Hertfordshire now, he was sent up to live temporarily with the family at Holy Island. Lucky lad, because it was an idyllic spot. And he was ready to go to school then. But he stayed. My mother was quite ill. And an aunt, 3 aunts of my father's sisters helped to keep the family going. And Jim was subsequently allowed to stay on the island. So my father had five children here and one at Holy Island, which he sent the occasional little bit, sum of money. But he was educated up there, and as my father was, of course, because he lived there. But Jim wasn't born there, but he went to school there, and he left at 14, came back onto the Tyne and lived with us for a while, and it wasn't a success because he'd been spoiled as a boy. But my father had, we had very little, really, to be fair. Had my father not been a railway worker with free transport, I doubt if we would have ever got away on any holiday at all, you know. And but we did. We had, even the teacher at school, when you went back to school after the summer holidays, by any chance have any of you boys, because they were all boys, one sex school, the girls were separate from the boys. And I had three sisters and they went to the girls' school. By any chance have any of you pupils had a summer holiday at all? And the answer was invariably no, except that John Allen put his hand up. Yes, sir, I was at Holy Island. And the first time I came out with that, I remember the teacher saying, "You were at Holy Island? Where is it?" I said, "Oh, it's off the Northumberland coast, near Berwick. And that's where my father comes from and his family. And they go back a long way, I believe." "Oh." And it was accepted that at least one boy got a summer holiday. And, of course, we did get a holiday. We were off school a month. It wasn't much more than a month because they hadn't the holidays that they have now. And we spent invariably three or maybe the whole of that because we had three cottages at least that we could be, they could be cycled as holiday cottages, and we thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a paradise, really.
How did the family, or his family, manage money-wise if you had such small income?
Very poorly, very poorly. I remember, for instance, hard times. Although, let's be fair, there was a gigantic recession then. And my father, at one time, we were the only family in a street that may have been 30 flats on one side and 30 flats on another, say 60 families. And we had a father who was the only man working in the street. And we had shoes on our feet where other children didn't have it. In fact, children went to school without shoes. And I remember distinctly my father used to sometimes, when my mother was at home well enough, my father would come home, walk along Redriff Road, to Redriff Road when we lived there, and then when we lived further along, down a side street, he went there, he came there, and invariably my mother would say, "Go and meet your father and run back with a penny for the gas." Now, that was the only man working in the street, and we had to have the penny for the gas so that my mother could cook the meal for my father. So that shows you how stropped they were for cash. And when I reflect on that, I say to myself, how on earth did other families live at all? And you know, when you think of today with all the benefits, that the money that sloshes around, you wonder just how on earth we survived, really. We were all right compared to them. But, and again, I have talked to people that were of my class, say, working people that I met later on in the printing trades and elsewhere, and they had far better lives than we did. Because the parents or parent had a bit better job. You see, my father was virtually a labouring lorry driver, as they called it, and he drove the shire horses that pulled the carts of goods round the city. And he knew Newcastle. By the time he was a married man at 26, he knew Newcastle in the back of his hand. And
how did you get through on food? Was it plentiful in the house?
Food? Oh, yes. I think my mother was a good housekeeper. And, of course, we had two elder sisters and an elder brother. And the elder sisters were growing up, and they were taught by the mum to cook, bake, and we invariably had a good table of solid food. No luxuries. I don't remember ever having a pop or anything like that, except one day an aunt brought in a bottle of homemade ginger beer, which a family two streets away apparently sold on the Sundays. And to us, that was a luxury, you know. And nowadays, people accept you buy a bottle of pop at the store, a huge bottle of Schweppes, say, and it's just accepted.
Did your father have a garden or allotment?
Yes. My father was a keen gardener. At the Bensham station, we were in the district of Bensham. The Bensham station had a lot of spare ground around it, and there were allotments. Now, my father booked one. I think he got it through the Allotments Association. It used to be, at one time, that Gateshead Corporation used to run them like Newcastle does, because we always had garden produce, which must have helped tremendously, really. But things weren't expensive. They were expensive to the point that, in relation to your salary, your income, it certainly ate that away. But you couldn't save. Nobody could save. And I don't know yet anyone that could say to me, on £2.5 with a family, and I think at a later date, by the war started in 39, my father would be earning £2.10.
How did you do for clothing?
Clothing?
Was it passed down?
Well, yes. You see, we had a lot of cousins. And fortunately for myself and my young brother, who later died, we had cousins who were just a shade older than us. And my Aunt Bella and my Aunt Ina and Aunt Edith, they all had two children, one child. And their clothes, one of my uncles was a trimmer on the Dunstan Estates on the Tyne, and his salary, his wage, was so much bigger than my father's, because he worked all hours. He was on a better job. He made money, and he got rid of it, of course, as well, in various ways. But they lived better than we did. In fact, my father's three sisters and their hubbies, two of them worked with my dad, funnily enough. But they had less family to worry about, and consequently it showed. And the other, my Uncle Tom, who had a boy, who was actually my Aunt Ina's boy, and the sister, Bella, had taken him because she was barren and consequently childless. But when Ina died of TB, which was rife in those days, her two boys were farmed out to the other family. And they were held together like that. And that was done quite honestly. They weren't adopted as such. They were just brought up as, that's my aunt. She's my mum as far as I'm concerned. And Jimmy, who's in a home now in Gateshead, his clothes all came down to me. And then they went to my young brother. And they were good clothes. They must have been, because they were even good by the time they passed to my young brother. And that helped enormously. But we didn't have any girl cousins. And the girls had to be clothed. Now, they passed their clothes down because there was 2 years between each of the children. And my elder sister, who lives in America now and went there in 46 after the war, she her clothes were original, new, and then they were siphoned off and floated down the line, you see. And that was how they came to be clothed. And how my parents were clothed was, my father was a union man with the NUR, and he was treasurer for the Newcastle and Gateshead branch, and he got a stipend at the end of every year of £13, which was a sum of money. And I remember my father saying, "Oh, it's near Christmas. I'll have my annual stipend from the union when we ordered the books, and I'll be able to get myself a suit." And my father was called Joseph, and my mother was called Harriet, and I would hear him say, "And you, Harriet, can have the rest and get whatever you need." And that was how we lived. And my father was a good man. My mother was a good person. And together, they were good managers. And there was no drink. There was no smoking. My father had had a kidney disease, and he was told very early in his life, "You don't smoke." And he had been, but he packed that in when he came down to Tyneside. And my mother never smoked. Until years later, in the 50s, I noticed that she used to smoke a little, listening to the radio or TV, when, if it was in then. And there was certainly no... You hear now of this great horror of child abuse. Well, you know, I can scarcely credit that it's supposed to have been like this all the time, because we certainly, we never came across anything like that at all. We led happy lives, and I think the majority of our age did.
Can you describe your first house that you lived in?
The first house, it would be a flat. Well, that was the first one I actually lived in. I was born at home, and all the births were at home. And it was a three-bedroomed flat. And it was upstairs, and concrete stairs went down the back to an outside toilet, loo as they call them now, and an enclosed stairway down to the front door, which led onto the street. And I think you have a vague recollection of it. I remember the large sitting room and the three bedrooms. I wouldn't be in more than one of them, I think, which was the boys' room. And although at one time, twins, my sister and I, up till certainly school age, and young Tom, who was 2 years younger, we would all sleep together in one bed, and we'd tell each other stories, you know, and I was the storyteller. And the house, the flat itself, we exchanged it for an upstairs flat in another street, from the road to the street. And I don't know why, it was just my mother had a nomad outlook on life, I think, because I recall as a boy, from that early age of three, going into another flat on a street which sloped down to the railway, and the railway had a big wall at the bottom. Consequently, there were seven or eight streets along from Redgeve Road that led onto this railway, but you were shielded by the wall. But in time, you just forgot the trains were going by. And my mother, in our lifetime, till I started working, and even then, no, I think it stopped about then, we shifted as we called it in those days, moved home at least every second year. We went to various parts of Bencham always, and then towards Saltwell Park, which is a big park here, and then up to Sheriff Hill for the council house that we'd been on the list for a long time. And then it was a transformation, really, to go there, because you had a hot water and a bathroom. It's distinct from the ordinary sink where you used to wash in the ordinary flats. And it was quite a lift. And those properties are still there, but not the ones we were originally in, the flats. They're all away now.
What was the community like that you lived in?
The community? Very good. Very, very good. As you know, in England, it's not like Northern Ireland, where distinct communities are sort of kept together. You knew that your chum that you were playing with, for instance, I had a chum called Diston, Danny Diston, and the ear caught the name Danny, and you said to yourself, I think he'll be Roman Catholic, because Daniel, it was an Irish name, you know. And this boy and I had palled together for years, and I never knew, really, until he said to me, you're at Lady Vernon School, aren't you, John? Yeah. Ah, I'm at Joan of Arc. And then I knew that he was a different religion, but it made no difference. And you never knew the religion of people that you lived beside, but the community spirit was quite good. And as you know, the spirit during the war was extra good.
Where did most people work in Bencham area?
Railways. There were several self-employed, funnily enough, because we had a coal man lived on Redgeth Road, just at the top of our street, called Robson. And he was quite a character. And coal used to be tuppence a stone in those days. That was the cry. Beanie coal, tuppence a stone, you know. And I'm trying to think of, our immediate neighbour were called Coots, and the father worked for Newcastle Breweries as a dray driver, you know, taking the kegs of beer around. And when John, his son, grew up, he was a year older than I was, lived two doors away, but the two flats had two doors coming onto the lane, and he was the second door away, because the immediate door, the neighbour door, was the downstairs flat, you see. And John also went into Newcastle Breweries. What do they call them now? Federation Breweries. And he became a union man. And another neighbour was a gas man. In those days, you had a penny in the slot gas meter, and his job was to go around collecting the pennies. And if he took out £4 worth of copper, you got 2 shillings to the pound, you know. And that was a bonus for my mother. I remember she used to look forward to those 8 shillings or whatever it was. And that helped her enormously, you know. And, of course, my father used to obviously said, that's yours, Harriet. Do with it what you wish. And We didn't go short of food, but the washing facilities in these flats were rather primitive. You know, you had to boil your water to make a tin bath in front of the fire. And a lot of our relatives were miners on my mother's side in the southwest of Durham, and the Durham City area where she lived in Brandon when she was born. I looked around, I think now, of my school chums, for instance, and it's rather sad when you think, because you're not of an age to say to yourself, now what's Douglas Percy's father doing? You know, Doug was he became a church organist later on, and we were all, we went to a Church of England school, St. Cuthbert's, and it was opened, the patron of that school was a lady, Elizabeth Vernon, and therefore it was called Lady Vernon School or C.V. St. Cuthbert School.
What are your memories of your school life?
Very, very, very good. Marvellous, because school to me was a doddle. It was really fantastic. Really was. I met a man down in the private estate, which is below us, and he was a master cabinet maker, and him and I became firm friends, and he's in a home now with Alzheimer's, but when he had his wits about him, he was quite a guy, and he said to me one day, I've got a pal coming tomorrow, come down. He said, he's just your age, you'll get on well with him. Harry Barnaby. I said, oh, I knew a Harry Barnaby. I went to school with a Harry Barnaby. He went, oh, I don't think it'll be the same one. I said, I don't know. Barnaby's not a common name. Anyway, this guy came. I went down to George's home, and he was a widow by then, and his family had moved on. He was living alone, and he was glad of my company. And I was sitting talking, and he liked a wee drink, you know, and... we were having a whiskey. Not that I drink much. In fact, I don't drink except once a month with the DLI Association, a pint of beer. And he said, oh, here's Harry. And he opened the door and Harry Barnaby came in, you see. I knew him right away. And I said, I knew Harry, George. Him and I were at school together. He looked at me, he said, you're joking, aren't you? He says, you weren't at school with me, boy. I said, no. I said, why? What makes you say that? He says, because you're not my age for a start. I said, no. Well, what age are you? I says, I can tell you what age you are. He said, what? I said, well, you're a year older than I am. Because I said, when I was moved up from the infants to the boys, the juniors, I missed a class. Because I was a bright kid. And he went, oh? I said, and I went into standard two immediately. I said, and the master or the mistress, I think there were still ladies teaching the younger classes. I said, it was either Miss Humble or Mr. Coates. He said, it was Miss Humble. He said, you were in my class. I said, yes, I was in your class. And I said, I'll... he said, what's your name like? I said, John Allen. He said, oh, we had two Allens, Ronnie and John. He said, I don't remember you. He said, name some of the boys. I said, oh, I can name them all. I said, name the lot. I said, I can go through the school register. Do you want me to? He went, ha-ha. So I went through about eight or nine. He said, oh, you know them. And I said, it's amazing that you don't know me. I said, because you used to play football quite a lot. I said, although you wore glasses and you used to take them off, but I said, you needed them on, really, and your play showed it. He said, my God, you know it's something about me. He says, and I don't recognize you at all.
What did you think of the education you got?
Very good. Within bounds, considering that you went to school at five and you went into the higher part of the school from the infants at seven, and you were there for 7 years and you left at 14, you packed a lot into it. And I said, I passed the 11 plus, actually, in 1936. Beg your pardon, 1933. That was the year Hitler came to power. And I passed for the gated grammar. And my father and mum said, well, you know, John, we can't afford to let you go. Because, A, we can't afford to buy your uniform. We tried it with Elna. She passed for the girls. And she said we had to withdraw before, and she had to take a job at 14. And it was rather sad.